This is ProBlogger.
Welcome to episode 166 of the ProBlogger podcast. My name is Darren Rouse and I'm the blogger behind ProBlogger.com, a blog, podcast, event, job board and series of ebooks all designed to help bloggers to grow their audience and make money from their amazing blogs. You can learn more about ProBlogger over at ProBlogger.com. In today's lesson, I want to share 11 factors to consider when thinking about your blog's editorial strategy and coming up with your own unique blogging style. You know, the success of your blog really does hinge on many factors, as you'll know from listening to previous episodes. There's many things that do help to grow your blog, but among the most important of them is obviously content. Putting thought into what content you want to focus upon creating is so important. And what I want to share with you today will, I hope, help you to create a framework for content that not only helps you to serve your current readers, but also to help you to create a blog that stands out from the many other blogs in your niche. And this is a question I get asked a lot is, you know, how do I make my blog stand out? And whilst there are many factors, I think ultimately it will come down to your content as one of the most important factors. This episode today is perfect for anyone just starting out with blogging who's thinking about content for the first time. You may be starting a blog and thinking, you know, what should I be writing about? And this episode will help you. But I think it's also perfect for anyone who's been blogging for a while where you want to review your content and to renew your editorial strategy. You can find today's show notes, and I do have a lot of further reading today, and I encourage you to open these notes up as you listen if possible over at ProBlogger.com/podcast/166. Okay, let's get on with today's show.
Creating great content. Finding an audience. Building engagement. Monetizing your blog. This is ProBlogger.
So I was recently asked a question on a podcast interview that I really struggled to answer. It stumped me, even though the question was quite simple in some regards. The question was this. They asked, in the early days of your blogging, how did you develop your blog's editorial style and strategy? Now, whilst on the surface, this does seem like a very simple question to answer for someone who's been blogging, I've really struggled to answer the question because I knew the interviewer was looking for some practical strategies to develop an editorial strategy. But the reality was, in the early days of my blogging, I wasn't overly strategic about my own content. I wasn't intentional about it in the early days of my blogging. You know, my first blog was a personal blog, and I don't ever remember sitting down to come up with an editorial strategy when I started that blog. The content on that blog just kind of came out of me. I wrote about what I was thinking about on any given day. I followed my interests, my passions, and as a result, the content flowed. It was a personal blog too because I was writing about all kinds of topics, and so it was okay to experiment with different voices and to experiment with different topics. I guess in time, my style of content did emerge as I began to focus upon creating content that gave me energy and that I could see my audience seem to respond to, but there wasn't really any strategy there. The style just sort of happened to me. Now, that was my first blog and it was a personal blog, and I suspect many bloggers who start with personal bloggers have similar experiences to that. And in many ways, I guess the big picture advice I could give and that I did give in my answer was to do just that. Create content based upon your passions and interests and pay attention to, you know, what's giving you energy and to what's giving your audience energy. And that's the answer I kind of gave. But ever since that interview, I've not felt completely satisfied with the answer I gave because I realized that while in the early days of my blogging, I don't ever come up with a strategy. I didn't really sit down and think about, you know, this is my strategy. I did make a series of decisions in that blog and in my other more niche-focused blogs that I guess did shape my style and strategy. And whilst it wasn't intentional, I was making decisions along the way. And so what I thought I'd do today in today's episode is to kind of reverse engineer my experience and to go back through some of those decisions and to put them all together so that you can be a little bit more strategic about this type of stuff. You know, the 11 decisions that I want to kind of run through today, I made them on the fly. I made them without actually even knowing I was making them in some cases. But that doesn't mean you have to be on the fly. You can actually take these 11 decisions and make them about your blog today. And as I said at the top, these are 11 decisions that a new blogger, I reckon, if you're making these quite intentionally and experimenting with these things, they could actually help you to fast track your own blog's growth. And these 11 decisions are also great for anyone who's been blogging for a while who wants a bit of a framework to think about what they've been doing on their blog. You've probably already made these decisions without even knowing it, but sometimes it's worth, you know, just assessing how are we going with our editorial strategy and do I need to change direction in some of these areas? I hope that makes sense. Hopefully, as I get into the 11 things, you'll begin to see what I mean by, having already made these decisions.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
Okay, so let's get into them. Probably the best way to really explain what I'm doing is to share it with you, and I hope it makes some sense to you. So the first decision that most bloggers make, and it kind of often happens to you, is to think about your voice. What voice do you write in, and what voice do you want to write in on your blog? Now, I've talked about voice in previous episodes, and I will give you some further reading on this, but one of the most helpful frameworks for thinking about voice that I've ever seen is something that I saw Jeff Goins presenting in an event that we ran in Portland a couple of years ago, a ProBlogger Day that we ran off the back of World Domination Summit. And at that event, Jeff talked about five platforms or five positions that you can come at blogging from. And he said that pretty much any niche or any topic, you can write a blog in these five different voices. And so the first voice, the first platform is the voice of the professor. The professor is someone who researches a topic, who studies that topic and comes up with a hypothesis and then teaches in a fairly authoritative type voice. The professor is often seen as an authority, as a thought leader in their particular industry because they've done a lot of research and they've really developed their ideas. When I first came across blogging, this was the type of blog I saw when I started out. And I thought everyone was a professor. I thought everyone who had a blog was writing in this style. And I started out trying to be the professor and very quickly discovered that that wasn't the right voice for me. So that's one type of voice that you could put into any type niche. You could be the professor of photography, you could be the professor of blogging, you could be the professor of any topic, really. The second voice, the second platform that Jeff talked about at our conference was the artist. And the artist isn't a teacher. They're someone who's more interested in the beauty of a particular niche and a particular topic. They're telling stories. They're really trying to inspire people. They're, I guess, tackling the topic more in a heartfelt way than a head kind of way that the professor might. So the artist is someone who's looking for more beauty in the topic. The third type is the prophet, and the prophet is someone who tells the cold, hard, ugly truth about a particular topic. They are busting myths, they're telling it like it is, they're calling people and ideas out. Sometimes they're not the most popular blogger in the world because they sometimes do say things that are uncomfortable for other people in that particular niche, but that's the approach that they take. And they can really be tackling the same topic as the artist or the professor, but in a very different way. The fourth type is the journalist, and this is probably what I'm a little bit more like. The journalist is someone who gathers ideas, curates ideas together, and then presents a story. I think I'm somewhere between the journalist and the professor if I had to choose from these particular types. So the journalist is someone who's gathering ideas, they're writing a story, and they're presenting ideas. And a lot of the ideas may not be their own ideas, but they're gathering them together from different sources and from their own experience, I guess, and then putting it out there. And then the fifth type is the celebrity. And the celebrity isn't someone who's famous. They're someone who's more charismatic. And I guess people read their blog because people want to know what they think about the niche. And so those type of blogs is more about the personality and how they intersect with the topic. So there's five different voices that you can use in your blogging that Jeff puts out there. And he says most bloggers really fit into one or two. It might be a combination of those things. They're just five words that you can describe your voice. Now, you may not be comfortable with some of those words. I know some people don't like the word prophet. Some people didn't like the word celebrity last time I talked about these. That's totally fine, but you can be intentional about your voice. You might be the companion. You might be the mentor. You might prefer to be known as the entertainer or the reviewer or the curator or the storyteller. You might be the guide, the teacher, the thought leader. Any of these things might be your voice. And on some levels, sometimes the voice kind of just comes out of us, like I described earlier, but sometimes you can be intentional about that. And as I think back to starting Digital Photography School, my main blog, I actually was intentional about it. I made a decision. I looked around the photography space and I saw that a lot of photography teaching type blogs were using the professor's voice. They were authoritative and they were at a fairly high level. They were talking, using words that a normal person perhaps couldn't really relate to. And so I decided I wanted to be a teacher, yes, but I also wanted to be a companion. I wanted to be someone who was speaking in a more conversational voice, who was talking to someone who maybe was just behind me on the journey. So this is what I'm learning about photography. Try this out. And actually trying to use language that was a little bit more accessible to people. And so my voice was more the conversational voice, the companion teacher. If I had to describe it, it would be the companion teacher, as opposed to the professor. And that helped me to stand out because there weren't many blogs writing in that voice. So sometimes voice happens to you. It just comes out of you. You just start writing in a certain style, but sometimes you can be a little bit intentional about your voice as well and make a decision based upon that. So the first area, the first factor to consider, the first decision to make, if you like, is what voice will your blog be in? Now, some of you already have a voice and you're very comfortable with that, but maybe you want to go through that list of professor, artist, prophet, journalist, celebrity, companion, mentor, entertainer, reviewer, curator, storyteller, guide, teacher, thought leader, or something else. And I'll include all of those in a little slide that I've got in today's show notes. So the first area is the voice. Second area that you might want to make some decisions about is whether you want evergreen content or whether you want more time-sensitive content. Now, again, this isn't an either-or type decision. You may have a combination of that. And I think most blogs probably do have a combination with that. But most bloggers I know tend to major on one or the other. So on my blogs, I tend to create more evergreen content. And I actually spoke about evergreen content just a few episodes ago. It was probably actually about 30 episodes ago now, in episode 136. And I'll link to that in today's show notes. And I talked about why I love evergreen content and the power of evergreen content. On Digital Photography School, I'll use that as an example again. Most of the content there is evergreen. I'd say 95% of it, the day it was written, whether that was 10 years ago when I started the blog, a lot of that content I wrote back in 2006 is still relevant today. In fact, it gets a lot of traffic today. And one of the reasons it gets a lot of traffic today is because people still find it helpful and they're still sharing it and they're spending a lot of time on it. And Google sees that and they rank it high. So evergreen content is great if you can write that, but it's not the only type of content that is a legitimate strategy for your blog. You can be more of a time-sensitive content. As I think about my wife's blog, Vanessa, her blog is Style and Shenanigans, and I can link to that in the show notes as well. It is more time-sensitive. She's writing about style, fashion, books, movies, what's on Netflix, those type of things. And as a result, some of those things date. You know, the books that are new and current, she occasionally writes about a book that's been out for a few years, but most of it tends to be the books that have come out in the last few months, what's on Netflix now, and particularly her fashion posts, you know, fashion dates so quickly, and so she's more focusing upon time-sensitive content. But from time to time, she throws in an evergreen post, and they do quite well as well. So on both of our blogs, we have a combination of them. I occasionally will do a review of a camera or might write about a new camera that's coming out that's more time-sensitive. But most of the content is evergreen, whereas most of her content is time sensitive. And so there's no right or wrong answer here. It's just a decision that I guess I made in the early days without really thinking about it in much depth. So again, what kind of content do you focus on? Do you want to have a combination of both? Would you say a certain percentage of the content needs to be one or the other? And you may actually be really intentional about that. You may actually say, I want, you know, four posts a week that are evergreen, one post a week that's time sensitive, or you might flip it around. So that's the second area, evergreen versus time sensitive.
Creating great content and building your audience. This is ProBlogger.
The third one, I found it difficult to actually come up with a label for this. I've said it's the intent of your content. Now, some of you have heard me talk about how every week on ProBlogger, and Digital Photography School, I try to create content that informs, inspires, and interacts. There's three different intents in terms of the content that I'm trying to create. I'm trying to give information, I'm trying to give inspiration, I'm trying to give interaction. And I'll link to a post that I wrote a couple of years ago now on ProBlogger about how I do all three of those types of posts. So information, it's more tutorials for us. It could be news, it could be a review. That's more of an information type post. I guess it's more aiming at the head. I'm trying to teach people or give people the information to make a decision. Then inspiration for us is more image-based posts. So here's a beautiful photo. Hopefully that inspires you to go and take better photos. Or it could be here's a story of how I overcame a challenge. And hopefully it inspires you to overcome that challenge. And then the interaction posts are more asking our readers questions or getting them to do a little bit of homework and or to show off something that they've done to share their experiences. So those three types of posts work quite well on Digital Photography School, but we've decided to be very intentional about majoring upon information. And so every week on Digital Photography School, we publish 14 posts. We're very intentional about it. Two posts every single day. The only week that we don't do that is between Christmas and New Year's. We scale it back to one post a day. But over the normal week, we would do 12 posts every week that are information posts. They're either a tutorial, there or a review, or occasionally a piece of news. It's all information, those 12 posts. Then once a week, we do an inspiration post. And this is usually for us a collection of beautiful images that relates to one of our information posts. So it might be, here's 12 images that illustrate this technique that we've just talked about in a tutorial. And the last post of the week is an interactional post. And that's where we do a challenge. And we say, go and take a photo. And it usually relates to the inspiration post, which relates to that tutorial. And so we create three posts a week that relate to each other but have different intents. Now, your blog might be a different combination. You may say, I want to be more of an inspiration blog and occasionally sprinkle in some information or some interaction. Or your blog might be more about the conversation and might be more focused upon the interaction and trying to get discussion going and then occasionally sprinkling in one of the others. Or you might choose just to do one of those things and not bring in the others. So these are decisions that you might make. And again, you might make these decisions without actually knowing you're making a decision. You might just look at the content on your blog and realize that it's all information. You never do an interaction post. You never do an inspiration post. And that might be totally fine. But you might also decide to experiment with some of these different types of posts. And you might even, like we have, to work out what ratios you want to do. Okay, so we've talked about voice, we've talked about evergreen versus time sensitive, we've talked about the intent of your posts. Now I want to talk about the format of your posts. And this does relate a little bit, flows from the decision you might have made about the intent of your posts. The format of your posts might be, it's more about, you know, are you writing reviews or are you writing how-to or are you writing opinion posts or are you writing resources and links posts or are you doing interviews or are you doing case studies? There are so many different types of posts that you can write and these more relate to the format. And again, you can be very intentional about this. You may actually just come up with a weekly format, for example. You might say every Monday is an opinion post, every Tuesday is a tutorial post, every Wednesday is a link-up post, every Thursday is an interview. Some bloggers are very intentional about that, and others let it flow a little bit more. So these are decisions. And you will find that most blogs tend to go with two or three different types of posts. Some blogs just choose one, and that's all they do. But again, this is something you can be intentional about. Maybe to add a little bit of spice to your blog and to freshen up your editorial style and strategy, maybe you need to try a new type of post. Now, again, in today's show notes, I've got a link with 52 different types of blog posts that we've published on ProBlogger as well. Okay, the fifth decision that you can make is about the authors. Who is going to write the content on your blog? Now, for most bloggers, it tends to be that they are the only author on their own blog. Most bloggers start out that way. When I had Digital Photography School, started that in 2006, I was the only author on the blog. In time, I began to get readers volunteer to create some content. I began to see that we had some really good photographers reading the site, and so I reached out to some of those and said, hey, would you be interested in contributing an article for the site? And gradually over time, we got more and more submissions from people wanting to write as guests on the site. And so we turned slowly over a couple of years into a multi-author blog, but it was mainly guest contributions. And so multi-author blogs can be guest contributions where you have lots of different authors on your site. The other option is where you might have regular contributors. And so I guess really the three options that I would put forward to you today is that you might have a single author blog, or you might have a multi-author blog. And if you have a multi-author blog, you might have guests, lots of random guests, or you might choose to have regular guests. And so they're the three options. And Digital Photography School kind of evolved through all three. We started single author, then we started to do more guests. And in more recent times, over the last 5 years, really, we've developed a writing team. And so we have a team of about 20 authors who most of them contribute once a month. Some of them do once a week. The same thing has happened on ProBlogger. When I started ProBlogger, it was just me for the first few years. Then gradually I approached other bloggers to do some writing for us, and these came in as guest posts. And then we went through a phase where pretty much everything on the site, apart from an occasional post for me, was guest content. And then in more recent times, we've developed a team of subject matter experts. So we have Jim Stewart, who chimes in and does an SEO post every now, and we have other experts who come in and they own the category. They're the voice of that particular category. And look, there are advantages of each type of blog. There are certainly some advantages of being a single author blog. Your readers begin to get to know you, but having other voices on your blog does bring other areas of expertise and other perspectives as well. There's no right or wrong answer here, but these are decisions. And it may be that your blog evolves through a number of different options, or maybe it's a combination. Maybe you are a multi-author blog who has guests and regular authors. And that's what we currently do on ProBlogger, but we're moving more and more to that regular author model.
How to build and monetize your blog. This is ProBlogger.
So that's the fifth area. The sixth one is making decisions about the frequency of your content. And again, this is something that probably with most blogs evolves over time. And I've got some reading for you in the show notes on how many posts you should do on your blog. And again, there's no right or wrong answer here. But I talk about in one of them the pros and cons of daily posting. And there certainly are some upsides of lots of content on your blog, but there's also some downsides of that and some warnings in that particular post as well. So you might have a blog that is daily, you might have a weekly post, or you might even have a monthly post, or you might go more frequently than daily, like on Digital Photography School, where we have two posts every single day, 14 posts a week. On ProBlogger, we tend to do 5 or 6 posts per week, and that is across both the podcast and the blog. And we made that decision partly based upon our own capacity to create content, but also came down to how much content our readers wanted to consume. So frequency of a post is another decision to make, to factor into this matrix of decisions that we're coming up with. The seventh one is probably the most obvious. It's the topics and categories of your blog. You will find over time, if you have a niche-focused blog, that you tend to focus upon different subcategories within your overall niche. A niche or niche, however you pronounce that, or maybe you have a multi-topic blog and you just have different categories within that. Now, again, there's no right or wrong answer there, but it's a decision that you gradually make over time. And it's one that most blogs, it will evolve as well. Most blogs, there's an emerging category in your niche. So in the photography space, one of the emerging niches over the last 4 or 5 years has been a new class of camera. People have gradually been moving away from digital SLRs and they're moving to smaller format compact system cameras, so little mirrorless cameras like the ones that Olympus and Sony make. Still interchangeable lenses, but they're smaller format. They're not technically digital SLRs anymore because they don't have mirrors in them. And so this has been a new emerging category. The same's happened with smartphones. People aren't using point and shoot cameras anymore. They're now using smartphones. And so that's a decision we've made over the last year or so on Digital Photography School, is that we're going to start a new category of smartphone photography. So these are things that you will be making decisions about over time on your blog. There will also be categories that die. You may actually find that there's just a category that's not relevant anymore. Or it might be that you yourself have a new interest in your particular topic. And so you want to add a category, not because there's an emerging kind of trend going on, but it's an emerging passion or interest for you. And so this is something to return to time and time again. When you're starting out, you certainly will be looking at the topics and categories. But over time, it's something to make decisions about as well. Another decision to make about your content is the length of your content. This is number 8. And again, there's no right or wrong answer here, and there's plenty of examples of blogs that do lots of short posts. I think a lot of the gadget blogs like Gizmodo and Engadget, back in the day, particularly Engadget was publishing, you know, 10 to 15 posts a day, but most of them were 200 words. And they were more just news posts. They were like, here's a new camera, here's a new tablet, here's a new smartphone. And they might list the features, but they were short, sharp posts. Whereas other blogs on the same niche might be doing long form content. They might be really digging in, doing a deep review. I think of a photography blog, DP Review. It was doing posts at the same time as Engadget on the same topics on you know, cameras and gadgets, but DP Review were doing like 5,000 word reviews of a particular camera. It's very high-end type reviews. And so the length really, there are pros and cons of doing different lengths as well. And again, I've got some reading for you in the show notes about, you know, some of the pros and cons of long and short content. Related to that is the 9th decision to make, and that is whether you do content that is standalone or series of content. So sometimes when you have a long piece, you are confronted with the choice, do I want to break this up into a series of posts? Or do I want to just do one long post? And this is a decision that you'll find different bloggers take different positions on. And I know a number of blogs who just do one post a week and it's just a mega long post. Whereas other bloggers say, hey, for a whole week, I'm going to explore a topic, and they break their long post into a series of smaller pieces of content. And so their editorial style is every week or every month, we explore a new topic and we create content that builds upon what happened the day before. And that can really ultimately end up as being exactly the same content as a blog that has long form content, but it's just a different way of presenting that and becomes part of your style and a part of your strategy. No right or wrong there. And it may be that you want to experiment with a bit of both on your site. And this is something that we do on both of my sites at the moment. Most of our posts probably sit at around the 800 to 1,000 word length, which is sort of a medium length, but occasionally we're throwing in mega long posts. We just published one on digital photography school that I think was about 5,000 words long, and we offered a PDF version of it behind an opt-in as well. So mega posts can really work very well. We find that they get shared around a lot, but our short, sharp post gets consumed a little bit more as well. So we're doing combination, but I know other blogs will take the decision to just focus on one type of content.
You're listening to Pro Blogger.
Okay, the 10th decision is around the medium that you use. And again, no wrong or right answer here. You might focus on written content. You might choose to do more video-based content. You might want to do audio in more of a podcast. You might want in your video to do live video or more of a recorded video. Or you might want to do visual content, so infographics, or a combination of all of those things. And again, this is something that we make decisions about on ProBlogger particularly. At the moment, we're doing 3 or 4 written pieces of content per week, and we're doing 2 podcasts a week. And I'm trying to also do a live video once a week as well, although not doing a great job of that at the moment. So again, you can be very intentional about these types of things. And really, the decision will come down to, you know, your skills and experience, ability, personality. So you, it also comes down to the topic. You know, some topics relate better for video or written or visual. And then also your audience and, you know, what type of content do they consume? What are they wanting? What are they responding to? I go into much more depth on how to make that decision in episode 134 of the podcast as well. And then the last area, the 11th area that will relate to some blogs but not all, is the level of your content. Are you trying to create content that is for beginners, intermediate, or more advanced readers? Now, this is perhaps perhaps a little bit more relevant to people who have a teaching-focused blog or maybe even a news-type blog, people who are just exploring the news of a certain level. It may not be as relevant for some niches as others, but in my blogs, I started out both Pro Blogger and Digital Photography School very much focused upon the beginner. As I said before, in the photography space, there were a lot of very advanced photography teaching sites around, but no one really catering for that beginner. And so the first posts I wrote on Digital Photography School were very much focused upon things like how to hold a camera, what is aperture, what is shutter speed, very beginnery type posts. This has changed over the last few years, though. One of the things I've noticed is that my audience was growing up, and this might partly because in general culture, people were perhaps becoming more used to taking photos, and some of the concepts that I'd been talking about, perhaps they were more commonly known. But also, I think my audience grew up because I was teaching them, and this is what I'd want them to do. I think those long-time readers, they should know by now how to hold a camera, what shutter speed is. And so this is something I decided to make a bit of a decision on a few years ago, is to do more intermediate level content. And from time to time, we also throw in a more advanced piece as well. Again, this is something we've made a decision on. Probably 3/4 of our posts are still have that more beginnery type content. Another 20% probably is more intermediate. And then maybe once a week, we'll throw in something that's more advanced. Okay, so there's 11 things, and you can probably think of some others, and I'd be interested in what you would add to this. 11, I guess, decisions that you could make. Now, as I said at the start, some of these decisions you make on the fly without even really thinking about it, but I do think from time to time it's worth going back to these 11 things and to ask yourself, how are we going with them? Do we want to change our approach in some way? Let me revise them really quickly. The voice you write in. Whether your content is evergreen versus time-sensitive. The intent of your content, information, inspiration, interaction. The fourth one was the format, you know, the type of posts that you're writing, opinion versus lists versus resources versus interviews versus how-to content. Number five was the authors. Are you a single multi-author blog? Number six was the frequency of your posts. Number seven was the categories and topics that you might cover. Number eight was the length of your content. Number nine was whether you do standalone posts or whether you do series of posts that build upon each other. Number 10 was the mediums, written versus video versus audio. And number 11 was the level of your content. Now, as I said along the way many times, there are no right or wrong answers in any of these areas. In fact, the thing I love about going through this is that when you put your answers together to those 11 different factors, the chances of you creating a blog that's exactly like someone else in your niche are slim. And this is how you can actually stand out in a very crowded niche as you begin to look at what other people are doing, how they're answering that, and making some decisions not only based upon what you want to do, but actually you can make some decisions to stand out from what everyone else is doing in each of these areas. It may be that you take a really different approach in voice or evergreen versus time sensitive or the intent or the format or how many authors you've got or how frequent you are. You can make decisions in each of these areas that help to make you more unique and also that help to serve your readers better. You know, as you're going through that list of 11 things, just monitor you, how you feel. You know, how much time do you have, how much energy you have, how much passion you have, what your skills and experience, your personality. Also monitor the content and the topic as well that you've got. Different niches will sometimes determine your answers. Different topics will lend themselves to different mediums and different styles of content, different frequencies of content, Ethan. And then, of course, be monitoring your audience and particularly monitor your audience. How are they responding to the decisions you make? It may be that you decide to experiment with some long-form content. Watch to see how your audience responds to that. Do they share that content more? Do they ignore that content? Is some other reaction happen there? And you can monitor that in terms of all of these 11 decisions. I hope that's been helpful. I would love to hear what you would add to that. I'm sure as I've gone through those 11 things that you are thinking, hey, there's another one that you could have added. Please leave a comment over on the show notes at problogger.com/podcast/166. Add in what you think you could add. And I'd love to hear your decisions on these things. You know, which ones do you really focus upon? How has your blog changed over time? Have you evolved in your approach? I'd love to kind of hear your reflections on that today. Thanks for listening. There are plenty of things that you can read and listen to over on the show notes. Again, it's problogger.com/podcast/166 for all of that further reading and listening. Thanks for reading today and listening today, and I'll chat with you in a few days' time in episode 167.
You've been listening to ProBlogger. If you'd like to comment on any of today's topics or subscribe to the series, find us at problogger.com/podcast. Tweet us at ProBlogger. Find us at facebook.com/ProBlogger or search ProBlogger on iTunes.
Before I go, I want to give a big shout out and say thank you to Craig Hewitt and the team at Podcast Motor, who've been editing all of our podcasts for some time now. Podcast Motor have a great range of services for podcasters at all levels. They can help you to set up your podcast, but also offer a couple of excellent services to help you to edit your shows and get them up with great show notes. Check them out at podcastmotor.com.